Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on Giving Tuesday to talk about Giving Black. Our 100 days of Giving Black has drawn to a close, but our community focused on Giving Black and our Giving Black work has not. During our past campaigns, we have highlighted many, many wonderful donors and community leaders and have been inspired, if not just downright awestruck, by our community's generosity and accomplishments. Today, on Giving Tuesday, we sought not to just ask for donations and highlight donations, but to highlight philanthropists. And we have no better person to embody that spirit than Mae Douglas. Ms. Douglas has done it all. She's served on United Way Impact, Community Chair, to Tocqueville and Strategic Planning Committees. She's been involved with her community foundation as a chair advisory. She's worked with Guilford Child Resources Development as chair of their department and on the executive committee, of the YMCA as well, and many, many other universities and also corporate entities. We are so excited to talk to her. Ms. Douglas is a native of Greensboro, North Carolina, and she has enjoyed a well-decorated 37-year career as a human resource executive, not only spanning two major industries that culminated with her tenure at a highly revered C-suite executive for Cox Communications in Atlanta, Georgia. At Cox, she was the executive vice president and chief people officer. She was responsible for managing the human capital strategy and was very instrumental in building Cox infrastructure for human resources, which is very, very, very important, as we know, in a changing world. Under her leadership at Cox, she received recognition for many of the practices that she put in place, and Cox itself received recognition for its people practice from Women in Cable and Television, from Working Mother Media as the best operator for women in seven executive years, Training Magazine Top 125 for workforce training and development, as well as Diversity Inc.'s Top 50 Companies for Diversity and Inclusion. During her career, as you can imagine, she's received many awards, among them the industry's highest recognition, the Vanguard Award for Leadership. She's been listed among the top minorities and women in cable. Also was a member of the Executive Leadership Council, an organization of the most senior African-Americans in corporate America. Throughout her career, she has remained active in her community by serving as a leader, which we will discuss today, working with various nonprofit organizations. After her retirement from corporate life, she's returned home to her home in Greensboro and now is fully devoted to philanthropic opportunities and practices. She is one of the many people that is seeking to empower not just the people of her community, but giving voice to those who cannot speak for themselves. I am so honored to be here with my partner, Aethon Lindsay, from the Community Foundation of Greater Greensboro, to welcome with a huge heart and really listening ears, Mae Douglas. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. How are you today?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You know, we have talked a lot about leadership on our show. We've talked about it as in what people need to do to prepare to lead. And we've talked about leadership is not just about the here and now, but really focusing on the future. And the future isn't always well defined. In philanthropy, sometimes when we talk about leadership, we often look back to determine where we're going in the future. But one of the things that you've been able to do is really look boldly into the future and create spaces where there weren't always spaces. And sometimes we need to learn how to do this and to harness our power to be change makers in our community. This hasn't always been easy, but I'm kind of curious from your point of view, if you could just give us a little bit of overview of your leadership style and what has propelled you and helped you to be able to lead in spite of culture changes, particularly what we've seen over the past two decades.
First of all, I'm glad to be part of the conversation today on this Giving Tuesday. I've already received communication from several of the groups that I work with and some I don't work with, so I'm sure that many of the listeners on this call today have done likewise. I think where I'd like to start is to talk a little bit about this notion of philanthropy and leadership and sort of how I have shifted my view over time, actually, because I was first introduced to philanthropy through my corporate work, and you read my bio, so I had a long career in corporate, and many of your callers are probably, you know, part of an organization where they have philanthropic efforts on behalf of the organization, but also where they encourage their employees to get involved through volunteerism. They use it as an opportunity to become an employer of choice in their communities. It's also an opportunity to give back into the community where they do business, where they have customers, and where they recruit. And so I would say my initial introduction to philanthropy started in the corporate world. And then as I started to think about my transition from corporate into the private life again, I started to think about a book that I read when I turned 50, and it was called Halftime. And it was a book written by Bob Buford, who actually was an entrepreneur in the cable industry, where he talked a lot about investing in people. And I've always had a philosophy that we are sort of God's representation to love those around us, and that's sort of how I interpret philanthropy as well. It's an opportunity to show love and concern and development and empowerment of those that we see in need and those around us. So for me, the role of leadership is sort of a natural transition from a corporate leadership role where I had opportunity to interface with employees as well as communities and customers to my private philanthropic life now, where I continue to take on leadership roles in all of the organizations that I'm a part of, because I think when you're part of the leadership of an organization, you get to understand the strategy of that organization. You also get to understand how all of the pieces fit together, and then you are able to translate that into workable, action-oriented practices and solutions. I think for me also, it's understanding that everyone has an opportunity for philanthropy. I think if you think about Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or our children in school at whatever level, they have opportunity for community service. So when we think about philanthropy, I also want us to think at a macro level, because I think you have to start there to get down to the micro level of the actual giving and serving.
I see. You know, you've brought up some really great points, particularly your path coming from corporate. And we've seen philanthropy change and change in the workplace for many years, particularly these last two decades. What are some of the drivers you think that are changing or helping to shift the way that we see philanthropy, particularly in our corporate lives? What shifts have you seen over the past 20 years or so?
I think there are several. Yes, I think there are several. And my team and I used to talk about drivers all the time because it was helping us inform us about how we built our strategy around the business, around culture, around the people, and how we engage the company with the people. And so these are going to be familiar to your listeners, obviously, but I don't think you can have any conversation in any environment anymore without talking about technological change and just being able to adapt to those kinds of changes. I think one is just the pace of change. I mean, it's Thanksgiving already, and we're headed toward Christmas. And so you hear everybody saying, gosh, where has this year gone? I think just the pace of change and being able to keep up with that change. I think the other is just competition, something that in the corporate world we dealt with all the time. You know, we used to have those luxury days where you could put a product out and you could engage your consumers or customers around that, and the revenue would come in. But as we got to the 07-08 period with economic recession, that shifted the competitive level for all companies. We could not take customers for granted anymore. So the competitive forces in the environment, I think, are also drivers that we need to think about that impact the workforce, but also our communities and resultant philanthropy. We're all certainly aware of a demographic shift and the population changes that are going on in our communities, not only locally, but globally. And also, one of the trends that started after the 2007-2008 period was this notion of temporary employment. You know, economists argue about, you know, whether or not we've recovered from that or not. Certainly, we're doing better than we were in that time. But we probably all know individuals who are perhaps working more than one job because that one job that allows them to support themselves and their families just doesn't do it anymore. So this increase in temporary employment. And the other that I spend a lot of time thinking about that we're also aware of is just the growth and aging of the workforce, and that in many organizations you do have multiple generations. And so what are the implications for that? You know, as a millennial, you have child care, but as, you know, a 60-plus-year-old in the workforce, you may have caregiving issues for adults. So it's that whole continuum of caregiving. So those are just a few of the drivers that I think impact us all daily, either personally or within the sphere of influence in which we operate.
You raised some really wonderful points. One point that I want to hearken back to that you had mentioned was the issue of technology. We, in the past few years, we've gone from Black Friday to Cyber Monday to now Giving Tuesday, that these things didn't even exist a few years ago. And I want to bring my partner in on this conversation, Ethan Lindsay. Thank you so much for joining us, for hailing from Greensboro as well, the foundation there. These things are impacting our work and also our ability to attract star power like Ms. Douglas, would you not say?
Yes, but I'm very fortunate that I get to work closely with the star, Mae Douglas, with our work expanding community giving, where she's been our chair. And one of the things that I think Mae, she's talked to it a little bit about the drivers, but I'd be curious for her to share her insights about what are some of the organizational trends that she's observed in the workforce that the philanthropy community should be aware of.
I would say one of the largest ones, and having led a human resources organization, I think, again, everyone on the call will relate to this, I would say the area of workforce development. And I'm going to use that as the umbrella term, because under that you have this issue of, I referred to earlier under competition, but do you source locally or do you source globally? So this issue of where do you find talent, the availability of talent. The other component under workforce development is this notion of diversity and inclusion. All of our organizations have to deal with this. I reference the demographic changes as a driver shaping the workforce, but certainly in the context of any organization, one of the workforce development issues is around diversity in terms of how do you bring into the organization a representation of your community, but also how do you bring in a representation of people that you're trying to sell your products to. I think another issue related to workforce development is skill set. And again, going back to technological change, the fast pace in which we all have to work the changing environments in which we all find ourselves, where are we going to get the skill sets? Are we going to grow them internally? And some organizations make that decision. You know, it's do you buy or do you not buy? Do you grow or do you buy? Do you grow internally or do you go to the marketplace and do you buy those skill sets? And this whole notion of continuous learning, training, and development, I think organizations are trying to figure that out. And, you know, I said buy or grow. You know, some organizations have to go outside of the country. And, of course, this is a controversial issue. But when you think about many of the technology organizations that provide products and services that we all enjoy, all of those skill sets are not in our local community or here in the United States. And this, again, is where this diversity issue comes in terms of being sensitive to other cultures and how you acculturate people into the organization. I think the other that also relates directly to our discussion about philanthropy is this notion of network partnerships and collaboration. I feel very, very strongly about that particular issue. And I think in the context of workforce development, one of the things that we had started to do was to help the organization understand that you cannot work in silos. In order to have a fast-paced, ever-changing organization that is going to compete in the marketplace, you have to turn around things quickly. And you cannot do that unless you have this ability to communicate across various levels, both vertically, horizontally, as well as diagonally. And then sort of the other implication for that has to do with people's own careers. I mean, people want to advance in their organizations, and so organizations struggle with this centralization versus decentralization. How many layers from top to bottom do I have? And what we saw, particularly with a lot of 30-somethings and 40-somethings, is viewing their opportunities for growth because, you know, the model had been that up is the only way. And so what we tried to do was start to shift their thought process is that, no, it's not up is the only way. It's the collective ability to learn and to take in experiences, whether they're lateral or whether it's moving into a project team, et cetera. So this whole notion of workforce development, I think, is one of the major organizational trends. And I think philanthropy can have an impact on that in terms of how it funds or supports or invests in those organizations that focus on workforce development.
You know, speaking of workforce development, one of the things that it brings to mind for me, our workforce is more diverse than ever. And so, therefore, as we seek to increase the diversity of workforce, it also bodes well that we should have more diverse philanthropists as well. And when we have talked to many philanthropists or people, potential philanthropists in a workplace, we realize that they're not really given the direction that they should be given. So in your mind, what could be the role of philanthropy, particularly Black philanthropy, in looking at the future of work?
I think one of the things that philanthropy can do, and I alluded to it a few minutes ago, is investing in organizations that can help identify what businesses or educational institutions, anyone who employs people, what skill sets and what attributes they are looking for. Because oftentimes, and we've had this issue here in Greensboro, actually, where the community has made a decision that it wants to invest in aviation. We have all of these aviation jobs, but we don't have the people. And part of the gap is that the educational institutions were lagging where the community was going. So I think to the extent that philanthropy can invest in research, and this is a very new point for me because I had the opportunity to attend with Ethan and yourself, actually, the Silicon Valley Community Foundation meeting a month or so ago. And one of my takeaways from that conference was the fact that we need to invest philanthropy dollars in operations of organizations that invest in other people, and we need to invest in technology because many times philanthropists only want to invest in programmatic kinds of things, those things that touch the clients directly. But that actually has opened up my thought process that maybe I do need to think about investing in supporting the, what I call the back office or the operational support, say, to a nonprofit, because they are only as good in their delivery of their human services to their clients to the extent that they have an office operations or back office that supports their ability to deliver those services. So I would say part of the role of Black philanthropy is investing in research and to help identify what organizations need and then the ability to translate that into curricula at the various institutions, whether it's the high school level or whether it's the community college level or the higher ed level, and also this notion of funding operations and funding technology support, specifically as it relates to nonprofit organizations.
Those are very, very good ideas. Wouldn't you say, Ethan, to really think about from your point of view of where your seat at the Community Foundation as well?
Well, I think what May brings out has been what I'd say, just elevating the thought, the thinking, and examination of how people do their philanthropy, particularly African Americans and other communities of color. I think as May and I, we've been on this journey, I'd say now for almost we'll be going on 2 years, and really just talking about, you know, what philanthropy can do beyond the charitable pieces. And as I'm listening to May, she really is exemplifying what I had hoped, that we could get more perspectives involved in philanthropy, but asking those critical questions about, okay, what is the role of philanthropy and what could be and what's possible. And as I'm listening to May, even just the language she's talking about, the role of philanthropy, she's talking about in terms of investing in organizations. A lot of that, I think, is just who May is, but it does kind of exemplify some of the work and efforts that we've been trying to undertake, is just getting us to elevate the conversations, but also what I'd say, just doing a little bit more critical thinking about, okay, what can our philanthropic dollars do and where should they go in terms of just, again, just addressing community needs and being more thoughtful and strategic with giving. So I found myself getting caught up, I will admit, in listening to May and some of the conversations we've had, a sidebar, but just to hear the thinking about philanthropy and being strategic is coming out. And that's been part of the journey that we've been trying to move forward. Similar to what the work you've been doing, Bethia, about just getting Black philanthropy to think more critically about how we're doing our giving and strategically where we want to invest these dollars.
The other point I would make, too, to follow up on what Ethan said, because at one time, and not to say that I'm still not, I think oftentimes our philanthropy is transactional. And by that, what I mean is I can easily write a check for $100 to the food bank, or I can easily buy book bags for kids to go back to school. But to the point that both of you are making, what I'd like to see in the Black community is to elevate the conversation to talk more about, it's great to provide the book bag and the food, but how do I help this family become self-sufficient, give them a greater self-esteem about their life and their ability to raise their families? And so that, for me, is elevating the conversation. And I think also going from transaction to talking about what are the outcomes and expected results. And I guess that's part of 37 years of corporate life. That's sort of why I get to that point, because at the end of the day, when you invest in something, you want to see a return. And so I still do some transactional giving, but for the most part, I am focusing my giving on more long-term systemic changes to individuals' lives. And so when I'm looking at where I want to invest my dollars, I'm thinking about how am I going to impact this family long term, not just giving them a bag of groceries and a book bag for their child to go to school, but how do we ensure more self-sufficiency, which requires a lot more of an integrated process when you think about philanthropy. So my goal would be to kind of move along this continuum from transactional to more strategic to talk about outcomes and results.
You know, May, you bring up a great point in the fact that the transactional versus the systemic change. And I think many organizations, I was at United Way a long time ago when we brought up this issue of outcomes, which most people were saying, oh, my goodness, how can we even think about that? I'm doing this great work, but to what end? And I think becoming more strategic about Black philanthropy in particular, of what is it that we want to see, what is that change, is key. One question I have to you, how did you get there to think about that strategic part, and what are some of your earliest memories on your personal giving, and as you moved along that trajectory to think about more outcomes and strategic giving?
Well, I think my earliest memory, and I think a lot of people on the call will relate to this too. You know, at 6 years old, with my allowance, you know, you had to give a tithe. You know, if it was 25 cents
right.
a week or whatever the amount, you had to give a tithe. So in the Black community, at least in my family, and I am so thankful for the upbringing that I had in my family, you know, I learned early on about giving. So it was about tithing. And so as I got older and went through school and college and started working, this notion of giving has been core and foundational for me. But again, it was all transactional kind of giving. I think, again, going back to the book I referenced by Bob Buford on Pastime, that book really changed my life in terms of reflecting on legacy and
mm-hmm.
impact. And then as I fast forward from age 50 to now age 65 and thinking about legacy and significance, which Bob Buford talks about a lot, I now have the opportunity to kind of look at 30,000 feet because I do want to invest my dollars where I think it's going to have the most impact. Don't get me wrong. I still contribute to Salvation Army and a local organization called Urban Ministry that's kind of transaction-based because I think basic human need is still an issue, and I want to support basic human needs to get people from point A to point B, but I don't want them to stay from point A to point B. I want them to go all the way to Z, and that's where the more okay. systemic aspect of it is. And for me, Bethia, a lot of it has been data. I have read a lot. There's a report that here in our local community called The State of Greensboro. So that, for me, was a foundational read. When I returned to Greensboro, and it's a study that's done, it's research that's done every year by an economist here at one of the local universities. So that was a basic read. I will tell you, reading your report, Giving Black Boston, was another data input for me and convinced me even more of the greater potential and impact that we in Black philanthropy can have. But it starts with data. You need to understand your community. You need to understand the issues. So for me, it's data, gathering intelligence. The other is obviously now I have the opportunity to interact with a lot of community leaders and engage in conversation and debate about what are the key issues in the community. And then just my own personal engagement with the organizations I work with, but also other organizations that I have an opportunity to collaborate or interact. I would say those three things, the gathering of intelligence, other community leaders, and my own personal experiences and engagement, have allowed me, I think, to shift my thought process from transaction to being more strategic and looking at outcomes. And I would say also through one of the initiatives that I'm working on, actually talking with families who are recipients of some of the human services in our communities and understanding how disjointed it is, how frustrating it is for the families who try to access those services. And so for me, investing in programs that collaborate, that develop partnerships, that bring people together as providers to solve bigger problems in the community, that's where I want to invest my dollars.
You, Ethan, you know, first of all, thank you. Thank you for reading our report, Giving Black. We really appreciate that. Ethan, as you know, as we've been doing this work with W.K. Kellogg, data has become crucially important. Even from the conference we attended in San Fran, again, data, big data, how are we looking at information? What is it that you're doing in your area to collect data, and how can we be helpful?
Well, I'm giggling at that because this is the kind of conversation that I've had with myself, but also with you. And to answer it, we're just starting really to figure out that data part. I'll be honest with you, as I got started with our project, some of my past experience, almost I'd say past experience or intuition, I knew some directions to go. But then one of the gaps I had to look at and go beyond, you know, kind of experience or intuition was really getting a handle on data. And data in terms of, I think I like what May said about how do we get some intel on what African-American, what's important to African-American donors, even who they are, what's their interest. And quite honestly, the cupboards, you know, it hasn't been there. They've been bare. And there hasn't been a real direct effort, I think, to find this information and get that data and have some baselines to work with, one that can just inform our direction, but also as we work in this field with donors in particular, you know, find out what is equity, what is important to Black donors. Do people even really know what it is? So that's my long-winded way of answering that question of that. We didn't have data, and actually thanks to May, she really opened my eyes and kept it before us and said, okay, what's the data that we're going to be having? And lo and behold, part of the research, Mathiah, is that, as you said, we've partnered with you, and I look at the study that you've done and you've led the way as being a source where we can at least start to gather the data and some of the intel to go forward and talk about here's the reality of what African-American giving is right now, but more importantly, here's the potential where we can go.
Right, right. You know, one of the things that we discovered in asking the question, where do you give? How do you give? Who influences your giving? Where are you getting your information from? We made some assumption about giving that we weren't correct about Black giving. We thought that maybe most Black donors gave to Black organizations. We were incorrect.
Right.
A lot of data talked about Black people giving mostly and mainly to church. High net worth,
mm-hmm.
We were incorrect again. So, May, you know, one of the things, another issue that we wanted to know, whom do you consult with when you're ready to give? Who plays that role to help you think through your philanthropic decision making? So, who does that for you, May?
That is a wonderful question, and I am so glad you asked that, because I'm not sure that people access the resources who can help them figure it out. And fortunately, and it took me about a year and a half to do this after I returned to Greensboro, but it started with my financial planner, and it was through my financial planner because I was able to discuss, now that I had shifted out of corporate life and I had a pool of dollars that I wanted to, you know, give to my estate and family, but there was also a pool of dollars that that I wanted to invest in my community because I grew up here in Greensboro. I loved growing up and living in Greensboro. Obviously, the community has changed since I lived here, but I want to be part of continuing to invest in the community so that those coming behind me will enjoy and say the same thing about the quality of life in Greensboro. So once I explained to my financial planner what my goals were, one of the recommendations that he made to me, which was probably the best recommendation, and I talk about it all the time, is he was actually the one that told me about something that's called a donor-advised fund. And a donor-advised fund is, it's a charitable giving vehicle to manage donations or contributions. And it also has a lot of tax efficiency because when you initially set up the funds, you get the deduction, and then you make the decisions about where you want to invest your dollars. And for me, that was my initial connection to the Community Foundation because in my research and in my conversation with my financial planner, he was the one who mentioned that through the Community Foundation of Greater Greensboro, I could establish a donor-advised fund that would allow me to make these kinds of strategic decisions in terms of where I wanted to invest the money that I wanted to pour back into the community. So I would ask any of your listeners to look into donor-advised funds because I think it is an efficient vehicle for those looking to go beyond just transactional. You can use it for transactional purposes, but for me, in terms of where I am on that continuum that I referenced earlier, I'm more about the strategic, more impactful kinds of investments in the community.
I see. That is a great segue to my next question. We have found that many people think about what is their legacy, what is that strategic investment, but also when people give, like Giving Tuesday, right, people just kind of give, and they give donations, they give charitable dollars, and social change has been one of these things, these questions, this issue that's on the minds of everyone, and I'm kind of curious, you've talked about it, you've touched on it, more explicitly, what does it mean to you, and how do you see the distinction, you've talked about it a little bit, between giving to charity and giving to social change, and do you find yourself spending time at one and your dollars at another?
That is a great question because if I think about our conversation, what we've been talking about is social change. And
right.
It's how do we help individuals interact with the environment in which they operate. We talked about cultural changes. We talked about economic changes. And, of course, these are all very, very complex issues. And in the context of philanthropy, and I like to think about social change as it relates to social structures. It's at an individual family level. It's a small group level. It's a community level. It's a state level. It's a society level. And so for me, this issue of social change is in direct correlation to what we've been talking about as it relates to long-term systemic transformational change. And I really feel strongly about this, Zaviah, that that's ultimately where we have to get to. And by that, what I mean is the opportunity to impact systems and structure. Because I think until you can impact systems and structure, the way even a nonprofit organization, if you're investing in that, goes about their work is not going to change. And one of the examples that I just like to give is part of the work that I'm involved in here in Greensboro, where we are trying to tackle the issue of self-sufficiency among those living in poverty. And one of the things that we did was to bring a group of providers in our human service providers in our community together to talk about how we could change the structures and the systems within their organization. And granted, these were not easy conversations because every organization is protective of what they do and how they service the
right.
client. But what we were able to do over a series of conversations was to bring these different providers who may or may not have interacted or collaborated or partnered with one another to come together to say, we all have the same objective in terms of serving these families. How can we come together and partner with one another so that if a single mother with children who need to be in Head Start, who does not have a GED and needs access to services, how can we, and she doesn't have transportation, how do we provide a social network for her to gain access to all of those services? And that's what I mean about investing in transformational kinds of initiatives. Those are the kinds of things I'm looking to spend my dollars.
But I, can I add something
sure.
to that? We're talking about the social change, and I think as I'm listening to May, you know, it just makes you want to say, okay, you know, let's bottle this up, and that's it when we've been talking about, you know, the importance or relevance of philanthropy and Black philanthropy, but more importantly, for more people of color to get involved in understanding the vehicles. Because May's talking about the transformative work that's going to take to go beyond transactional pieces, but it is transformational work. And the part of that transformational work for it to happen is we have to have people involved in understanding the importance of permanent building permanent charitable assets and understanding about legacy building and being
yeah.
able to lead a legacy. And I think if you say that's what the work that I think we're trying to do, what you're doing and what we're trying to do here is get us involved and get us away from that notion about, you know, well, this has just been reserved for a certain group of people where I have to be extra wealthy. But it's really about, as May said, that you get in and you sharpen your focus, you go beyond the transactional. But more importantly, when she's talking about a tool of a donor advised fund, that's not only positioned her to support the efforts that she believes in, but it brings her into the conversation. And
yeah.
that is so important. And that's what, when I tell folks or what we're trying to accomplish and what we can do, that's why your community foundation or the philanthropy pieces is so important. We're in the conversation, but if we want to see transformation take place, we have to have those permanent charitable assets. And to me, that is building on the legacy of the civil rights movement. We're now talking about, well, what's our 21st century tool or response that now we've made some progress in getting access to greater economic mobility. It's always under threat. But now that we have access to that, what's the next leg on this stool that we as a community can employ? Because I'll be honest, all of us aren't going to go out and march or need to be participating in that. But those of us who can do other things and want to do other things, that's what philanthropy is, and that's what it can contribute to this notion of transformation or social change. I
and
hope that makes
I also
sense.
Like a term that you used in one of our conversations about collective power. I love that.
Right.
We have the power within our own community to change our communities in a very, very positive way and impact those structures and systems that get in the way of having access to everything that they should have access to. I love that word power, collective power.
And collective power is the march of the 21st century. We've marched, we've used our political power, we've marched, we've used our civic power, and Ethan, you're correct, this issue of our economic power as in permanent dollars, and then May, the collective piece that brings it together allows us to create this next table, and I'm very, very excited. I can't believe that time is winding down, and I feel like we need a part two to this conversation, but we do have a couple of calls. We do. We have a couple of callers online that I'm going to go to. Thank you, callers, for hanging on. I am going to call out the last four digits of your number, and it, once I call the last four digits of your number, you will be live, and if you could ask your question at that time, that would be great. So caller at 9092, you are live. Please join us and ask your question.
Yes,
hello?
I was. Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're here,
yes.
Please.
Okay. My question is basically what the average person can do to leverage their small contribution in the best way to get the biggest bang for their buck.
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
It's an excellent
question.
What can
the
average person do? Before, I had mentioned that there are lots of ways that people give. And I think people give, philanthropy is a hard issue. And the way I like to think about it, too, is that philanthropy is using the love of God to show love to his people. And so you can do that. Remember early on I said there are many ways everyone has an opportunity for philanthropy, whether it's, growing up in the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, or when the family goes on Thanksgiving Day to serve food at a place where they're feeding the homeless. I think there are many of those ways to give, and that is charity. And I think it's giving from the heart, and it's whatever that family unit or that individual or that family, however they want to contribute. Because if you read most of the research on philanthropy, it comes through individuals, not large corporations and foundations. So there is lots of power at whatever level you are, wherever you are in the community you're in, and the sphere of influence and the people you interact with to give. Because if you're meeting a need, then I say that's philanthropy. So wherever you are, there's the opportunity for philanthropy.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would add is that I like how Maya said is that, it allows you to be transformative. Whatever you give, as a donor, you can ask those critical questions. And part of that is just saying that, not to diminish, whatever your average or whoever, average people have changed the world in a lot of ways by simply getting involved, but also going ahead and asking those critical questions.
We are quickly running out of time. I'm going to open it up for one last question. Caller at 9705, caller at 9705. If you have a question, please ask it, and thank you for joining us. Okay. Well, I want to say that I really think we need to have a part two. This conversation is the perfect conversation for a Giving Tuesday, and thinking about how we can be more impactful and strategic about giving Black, even on Giving Tuesday. And thank you for sharing your thoughts with us, Ms. Douglas, and your inspiration, but actually giving us concrete ways to get involved and reminding us that philanthropy is time, talent, and treasure. And there's a way that we can have legacy or provide a path of legacy for ourselves and our families in the future. So thank you so much, Ms. Douglas, for joining us today. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. I enjoyed the conversation.
And thank you, Ethan Lindsay, for being my partner in this work. We look forward to working together in the future. And for our listeners, thank you for joining us for this season of Giving Black. Please be sure to join us next year when we kick off our 100 Days of Giving Black in August, National Black Philanthropy Month. And until that time, join us on our website, join us on our call, but just reach out to us. We look forward to hearing about your adventures in Giving Black and the work that you're doing and the legacy that you're putting out. We thank you for being with us this entire season, and we look forward to you joining us next year with 100 Days of Giving Black. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.